In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about being in the women's room, being poor, and being a rebel in our discussion of The Elite and The One by Kira Cass, narrated by Amy Rubinate. Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire, and today we're going to discuss The Elite and The One by Kira Cass, narrated by Amy Rubinate.
Standard disclaimer. If you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
That felt extremely short. Or you just extremely fast?
It was so fast.
So skilled.
I know. I know. I know. Yikes.
So, we're doing the last two of the Selection trilogy.
We are. I really felt like the Selection needed its own episode. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these last two wrap up the story nicely. Sorry, we're not going to cover the future two or any of the other ones. This is where we're going to stop with the Selection.
Yeah. We already have one series this year we're going to concentrate on. Yeah. And it's fantastic.
Did you say fangtastic?
Yeah. I have to pun tonight. Do you know why?
Why?
The night of this recording is exactly the 1 year anniversary we interviewed Gail Carriger for the first time together.
Oh. Aww.
I know.
Aww. That was fun.
That was puntastic.
Yeah.
So that was a good one. I had to get a pun in there somewhere.
Good. I'm glad. Worth it.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, it's good.
So we've already had some background information to the Selection. Did you find out anything more for this week?
Yeah, so it's funny that you should say that because I had decided I'm not going to find background information. Why do I need to find background information? I already had background information last time. But I looked anyway, and then I stopped looking because I accidentally found a video of the Selection in 4 minutes made with Barbies. And then I was done. It was hilarious. Life. And that's all I ever wanted to do in my life.
That link will need to be posted.
Yes, we need to share that link.
It will no doubt also be included in your blog.
Yes.
So go to www.fictionalhangover.com and access the blogs there and you can find the link. And we will make every effort in the world to also put that link in the comments
this episode.
In fact, let's pause now for you to go and find that link. Delightful.
It's so good.
Netflix, come on, man. You don't need to do some actual castings of 40-year-old people playing teenagers. You can just use Barbies.
Use the Barbies. It was perfect. Yeah. It reminded me of the Breaking Dawn video that I made for the library a long, 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 long time ago because we used Barbies for one scene. And it's all I could think of. And now I just want to go through and make every book I've ever read with Barbies. I don't even have any Barbies, but I want to do it.
I get a robot chicken vibe.
Yeah.
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 So I'm living for it. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So I accidentally stopped taking background info notes then, I guess. I don't know. The Barbies.
I think Barbies that says everything. Much. Says absolutely everything.
Yeah. So do you have initial thoughts?
Okay. Do you want good ones or bad ones?
You know, whatever you're feeling.
Whatever I'm feeling? Okay. For me, The Elite book in and of itself, completely pointless.
Completely unnecessary. Good. I'm glad. I had the same feeling.
This could have very easily been one big book or a duology if you really wanted to push it.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, that is, like, my similar initial thoughts. Like, normally the second book in a trilogy is my favorite one, but not this time.
Yeah, I like second books because you've established the characters, you've established the scenario, you know what's going on, so you can basically just dive in and get to the nitty gritty of it. And it didn't need to be there. Mm-hmm. And the one did not hold many surprises for me.
The one, though,
we'll get to it, though. We will get to it. But it didn't hold any surprises for me. It was quite predictable because obviously America is the one.
Right. But there are some things that happen that were completely unexpected.
In this,
we had come to expect of the series. So that was, yes, that was good. But I just remembered that I did read something else when, before or around the Barbies, I did read something else. I read that...
I bet you woke up this morning never thinking you're going to say that phrase.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, so I read... It was the same website where I found the Barbies video. And that was... Let's see. Between the covers, au.wordpress.com is where I found the Barbies. There was an interview with Kira Cass. And she said she started out not really... She knew where it was going to go, but America wasn't, like, talking to her, and so she was just making stuff up as she went along. And then she got to the end and realized, no, I need to change everything. So she went back and started over and redid it. And so I read that, and then I decided, like, right before we started recording today, that I wanted to go and find out if she had mentioned anywhere how she actually originally intended it ending. Mm-hmm. And then I found it, and Maxon was supposed to die.
Whoa!
Right?
Twist!
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that ending. I mean, I like Maxon, but, yeah, you know, some people have got to die to tell a good story.
Yeah. So, anyway, I did find background info. Look, there it is. But the Barbies are more important.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it sad that I kind of want to, like, pause and go watch the Barbies again and then come back?
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, you know, we're the lords and masters of all we survey.
That's true. That's true. We really are.
Right, I'm back in the room. That was delightful. That was absolutely delightful.
Yeah, it's
perfect. My heart is broken. Seriously, Netflix needs to just do that.
I'd watch it.
Yeah.
And then they could sell Barbies. Make a ton of money from the Barbie sales.
Do those really exclusive, extra special ones that cost, yeah, like thousands and thousands of dollars as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's begin. We got two books to get through this time, so this episode's probably going to be a little bit longer than...
Get comfortable, people!
Yes, get comfy. Okay.
Grab a drink!
So we're going to start with The Elite. The Elite begins with America and Maxon on a date. They're spending an evening gazing at the stars. She really wants to love him, but just needs more time. When she gets back to her room, Aspen is on guard. He wants his chance to win her back, so he asks for more time, too. If only she had more time for everyone. She doesn't, though. In the women's room later, Queen Amberlee is chatting with the six remaining girls, America, Marley, Chris, Celeste, Natalie, and Elise, about their dream weddings. But then she has to go and get work done. The girls spend time together playing games and watching TV, but it's different now that nearly everyone else has left the competition. America and Marley are closer than before, and as Marley sits daydreaming by the window, America wants to ask her what she's thinking about, but lets her go on daydreaming. Back in her room, America studies reports to prepare for tests she'll have to face later on. Maxon comes to get her, and they joke back and forth about Maxon having the answer to everything. America asks him, as a challenge, then what's Halloween? And he doesn't know, so he ushers her to a secret library containing Gregory Ilya's handwritten journals. One of them has a picture of his children dressed in Halloween costumes shortly before the start of World War IV, and he complains about Halloween being frivolous and wasteful, which is probably why they don't celebrate it anymore. Maxine lets America take this journal back to her room to read more.
Ooh. America and Marley are becoming fast friends, even though Marley's horrible piano playing is atrocious. Let's be kind about it. You'd think with a talented musician like America teaching you, you'd be better, but yikes.
Mm-mm, no, it's terrible.
When it's clear that the piano is dying, the girls collapse into giggles and start talking about Maxon. Marley kind of tricks America into revealing how she feels about Maxon and says it's clear he loves her, so she should just end it. But she's torn, of course, between Maxon and Aspen.
Your...
My
confused.
Heart is broken. My heart is confused. She tries to ear tug Maxon at dinner, but he mouths that he's got work. So she goes back to her room. Aspen is lurking, guarding her door, and she slips inside past him, only getting a brush of his fingertips on her arm. Still, she's got time to decide between them.
At the report, the elite now take part in debates. During this report, they are discussing the draft. Celeste suggests increasing the number of men drafted, but America, really just because she hates Celeste's guts out, suggests that the draft be voluntary instead of mandatory, and then Marley, Chris, and Elise agree. Celeste and Natalie laugh at the idea, especially when Chris suggests that women be allowed to fight too. Oh yes, it is so hilarious that women are allowed to battle for their country. It's not a bad idea. In real life. Come on. Back in her room, her maids agree that the draft should be voluntary, but then Maxon comes in and they get all flustered and leave. Maxon suggests to America that they have a Halloween ball at the palace and invite all the families of the elites. She is so excited and almost tells him that she loves him, but then she doesn't. At least she does tell him that she wants them to be an us, so she's getting closer. As they prepare for the ball, the girls have dance lessons and menu tastings and costume planning sessions. Maxon says his father wants him to narrow the group, so he'll probably do it after the ball, but then he goes off with all the other girls, except America, making her increasingly jealous. Aspen notices and says if Maxon can't see how great she is, then he's stupid, which is nice, but also kind of gross. And guess what? She's still struggling between the two of them.
My heart is confused. The families arrive for Halloween and all the girls are so excited to see them. America's mother, father and sister May have come to visit her. America tells her dad about the secret library with Gregory Ilya's handwritten books, but he's not a rebel, so surely it's fine that she told him. Pointed look at the microphone.
He's not a rebel.
Plus, who's he gonna tell? Like, no one. While the ladies are having tea with the Queen, May looks out the window and sees their father talking to Maxon. It looks like an important conversation. A conversation that Maxon didn't have with anyone else's father. At the party, it seems Maxon is again spending time with everyone but America, which has also been happening more and more lately. But when they finally do dance, he reveals that he's just been trying to put on a show with everyone else, but he really only has feelings for her. He wants to marry her, but he also wants to give her the time she needs to settle into her new role. The conversation he had with her father in the garden was him asking for her hand. Ooh.
Pretty sure we all know this already, right?
Yeah, we've guessed this. This is my surprised face.
I know.
The Halloween party evening ends with the elite and Maxon celebrating outside, watching fireworks and drinking champagne.
That was a lovely evening. It right? was. I mean, I'm not it sure was. That Halloween has fireworks, but if you
it doesn't not have fireworks.
I could. Like, if you don't know anything about Halloween, you could have fireworks.
Yeah, there wasn't enough candy for my liking.
No. So the next day, not so great. Womp womp.
Womp womp.
America is woken by somber maids. Her sister is sent back to her parents' room, and she is made to dress in black. Everyone is led outside, where an odd platform is set up. Marley and a guard, Officer Woodwork, are strapped onto whipping posts. They were discovered by a camera crew mid-undress after the party and are being publicly caned for their crimes.
Ooh.
The punishment for this crime is normally death. But Maxon spared their lives, though now they're both eights, the lowest caste. America pleads for Maxon to stop their caning, but he doesn't. She even tries to stop it herself, but again, the whipping continues. Marley is lashed across the hands, Officer Woodwork across the back. Again and again and again, forever, they are lashed. Woodwork telling Marley the entire time that he loves her. Ugh. America gets so worked up, she has to be removed by guards. Back in her room, she yells for everyone to leave and then cries on her bed, finally realizing that Marley and this guy have been sneaking around together for a while. Please remember us pointedly discussing Marley sitting in the sun by the lone officer in the last book. That's how long it's been lasting. A long time. So America also realizes that that could have easily been her and Aspen. Maxon comes by to check on her and apologizes, telling her he had to do it and she'll have to one day too. But does he really expect her to become a princess after that? Yeah.
Hello, Perks.
Hi, yeah. He begs her not to give up, not to leave him alone after this, and she reluctantly agrees. My heart is broken. Aspen comes in later to check on her and apologize, and this makes America fall back in love with him, because he'll always be there.
My heart is confused. In the women's room the next day, Queen Amberlee tells America that she's glad she tried to stop the caning, but that what she did was not ladylike. So, not exactly chastising her, which is good. Then the five remaining girls get into a heated discussion over what happened to Marley and if it was justified. America seems to think death would have been a better punishment and that no one knows about being poor like she does. That they'd rather be dead too. Please see previous conversation, last episode.
You don't know what it's like being a five. I'm a five. I'm poor.
Sorry, what level are you again? I didn't quite catch that the 600 times you told me before.
I'm a five. You'll never understand. I'm a five.
Celeste mumbles that Marley got what she deserved because she's a whore. And then America flies across the room at her and they have a vicious catfight. Celeste says she's going to tell Maxon, but Queen Amberlee sends them to the hospital wing instead. There, a nurse tells America she's a hero because everyone hates Celeste. She's insulted a girl's parents, who then slapped her and got sent home. She put glass in someone else's shoes and she hits her maids. Maxon comes to talk to them, and of course America is not being sent home because it's freaking America. And she has a free pass on absolutely everything. Oh! Sorry, I think we've gone off script there. Maxon comes to talk to them. And of course, America's not being sent home yet. Maxon asks her to give him some time to teach her that not everything will always be so terrible. She says fine.
Like, what does she expect? Rainbows and unicorns and candy and strawberry tarts all the time?
Just diamonds and strawberry tarts and fluffy kittens. That's it.
Sometimes bad stuff happens when she's a leader.
Exactly. She doesn't see that Clarkson, Amberlee, Maxon are leaders. She sees them just as monarchs. She doesn't equate the two, that with, you know, great power comes great responsibility and all over cheesy phrases like that.
Yeah. Ugh. So frustrating. When she's released from the hospital wing, America encounters Aspen, who has left her a note in the penny jar she brought with her from home. It tells her to meet him in a secret location, which, of course, she does. He tells her that he loves her and is proud of her, and isn't she glad she knows Maxon is a terrible guy now? She believes she'll never be worthy of being a princess, but that's okay. Aspen will always take care of her. In the women's room the next day, Celeste shows America a gossip column article about how Marley was terrible and that America is too. She's the last person anyone wants to become queen. She goes back to her room, feeling sorry for herself, and decides to play the piano, but even that isn't good enough. She needs something to distract her and finds Gregory Ilya's diary. Gregory thought that the American people had become so lazy, of course it was easy for China to take over. He had given money to the war effort, but he thought he was better than that. He could plan better, so he wanted to do something more to stop the war. Aspen comes in later and talks about how there's unrest in the southern provinces and that the king sent over 300 letters to citizens there, knocking them down a caste for aiding rebels. America asks if Maxon knows about that, and Aspen assumes that he does. Then he gives America a button from his jacket since he has no more pennies for her. This means more to her than anything Maxon could ever do. My heart is confused.
The next day, King Clarkson asks the girls to join him and the Queen for tea. He wants to chat with them. And he does, with all of them, except America. She goes back to her room and cries some more. Has she got any tears left, Jeebus?
No, I love that.
She's just a dry husk at this point. She needs extra moisturizer.
She's a dry, withered husk that goes between the women's room and her bedroom, and the women's room and her bedroom, and the women's room and her bedroom. That's the only places that she goes, and she's often crying in one or two of the places.
Do you think they've got, like, Kleenex, like, put at intervals just to make things a little bit easier?
She needs to just keep it in her bosom.
That is the point of having a bra. It's a pocket. You cannot tell me, I cannot be persuaded, that these ball gowns have pockets. Because
I'm sure they don't.
Nothing ever comes with pockets.
No. No, there's no pockets.
Well, at least Maxon has told her that she was pretty.
Oh, so that's important.
That's validation.
Sure.
Why not? We'll go with that. The next day, the girls get an assignment from the Queen. They are to plan receptions for incoming guests from Germany and Italy. Chris and America are assigned Italy, and Celeste, Natalie and Lise get Germany. They have a lot of planning to do, and only a few days to do it. But then, overnight, there's another rebel attack. Aspen ushers America from her room, but not before kissing her. She goes down to the safe room. Everyone gets there safely, except for Chris, who hurts her ankle and spends most of the night with Maxon, making America and Celeste jealous. Natalie and Elise are asleep.
They don't care.
Nah.
When she's awoken, America walks back to her room and sees a ton of destruction in the palace. Painted all along the walls are threats that the rebels are coming soon, so the girls take their work outside. They've still got to plan for the dignitaries' arrival. Maxon and the king and queen are outside as well, but everything soon goes crazy because the rebels are back and they've brought guns. Everyone scatters. America ends up running into the forest surrounding the palace. She climbs up a tree to hide, but is spotted by a rebel girl in a denim jacket, carrying a huge bag of books. The girl curtsies to America, laughs, and leaves her alone. America hides in the tree for a while longer until she's sure the rebels are gone. What is going on there that there were two rebel attacks back to back? What is happening? It's terrible. The one last night was obviously the violent Southerners, but the girl stealing books had to be a Northerner. Guards come into the woods shouting for America, and when she sees Aspen, she runs into his arms. He carries her back to the palace, where absolutely no one is waiting for her.
Wah-wah.
She wakes up later in the hospital wing. Maxon is at her bedside. He was so worried that she was gone forever, killed by the rebels. But she's still here, and he's not letting her go, even though it's obvious that he's got serious feelings for Chris, too. She can't worry about that right now, though, because she's still got to plan for the visiting Italians. She's struggling and wanting to be with Maxon and becoming a princess and thinks that reading Gregory Ilya's diary might help. It does not! He talks about becoming a billionaire and using what he has to succeed. Since he wasn't helpful, she decides to write to her father. Are we all seeing this here, that Gregory Ilya is Donald Trump?
The receptions happen, and the German one, led by Elise, Celeste, and Natalie, was boring and uneventful. Chris and America's Italian one was festive and loud and fun. The Italian princess tells America that if she can help her take the crown, she will, and gives her her phone number.
Which she tucks into her bosom.
Oh my god. I'll send you up on Facebook.
Oh my god.
We'll be like social media besties. Everyone at this reception loves America. When the reception is over and she's back in her room, America reads the letter she got back from her father, which tells her that she's great. And if she wants to marry Maxon and be a princess, she should do it. But he'd still love her if she didn't. America's summoned by Maxon the next day from the women's room, and everyone thinks she is being sent home. But instead, Maxon shows her the princess suite and a hidden passageway.
Ooh.
Behind it is Marley, who Maxon was supposed to have sent away to become an aide, but instead she now works in the kitchens, and her husband, former Officer Woodwork, will work in the stables when he's healed. Maxon has kept them safe, so he really is a good guy. And America struggles more with if she could be a princess. She still wants to stay though, so maybe she's feeling more princessy? My heart is confused.
Maxon and the king have to go to New Asia because things are bad with the war and they have to smooth things over. Maxon says goodbye to each girl individually, and his goodbye to Chris is particularly romantic. America's is whatever, but he notices her Aspen bracelet. Speaking of, Aspen was in her room that day, and the maids noticed and told her, so she knows he left another note. It was about Maxon being gone, with secret instructions on how to find him. He's hiding in the room of one of the girls who was sent home already. It's exactly the same as every other time America is with Aspen. She struggles with whether she should be with him or with Maxon, and everything is very repetitive.
My heart is confused. That is not getting old.
Nope.
Chris asks America to join her outside to talk about where they are with Maxon. Chris says that Elise says they never made it to New Asia, but they called and told the Queen they were there. That's odd. My theory is they just went to Las Vegas to have a blowout, but you know, where.
Could have done.
Chris says she loves Maxon. America is cagey. On her way back to her room, she finds a note on the floor about more rebel attacks and how they want to end the selection and the royal line. That's different, at least.
It's something that's slightly different from being in the women's room and being in the bedroom and rebels attacking and crying.
Tissues everywhere. It's like a snowstorm. She goes to her room. Oh, man.
Spoke too soon!
And she hears the maids arguing about something about Lucy, who ran out crying.
Damn it!
We had that brief glimpse. She dismisses Anne and Mary for the evening and reads Ilya's diary, which, surprising no one, is gross. Do you think he got a ghost written as well?
Probably.
He's just using his money to become leader and is going to force his daughter to do something. America sees Maxon outside after reading the diary, and he comes up to her room and gives her a bracelet that he bought in New Asia. It really did go there, apparently, to a rural area, though. Maxon thinks the king is just testing him. Once again, America gets confused about her feelings, but more importantly, she doesn't talk to Maxon about the diary, which is really why she wanted him to come up anyway.
My heart is confused.
Cliffhanger.
America decides she wants to learn things, which is good. It might make her a better princess if she...
That's the greatest sentence.
Excuse me.
Oh, can you tell?
Can you tell how we feel about the elite?
Oh, I'm laughing so hard it's making my veins stick out.
Okay.
Go for it. I'm fine.
America decides she wants to learn things, which is good. It might make her a better princess if she finally decides she wants to be a princess. She's still debating on that, though. Surprise, surprise. She asks Sylvia for extra lessons, which makes her super happy. Then she finds out that each girl has to come up with a philanthropy project to share on the next capital report, and she struggles with it. She asks Aspen for help, but he just wants to get even with everyone and suggests making the castes trade places. Maxon ear tugs her later, and she agrees, even though she's super stressed out about coming up with something for her project. Maxon pretty much gives her an ultimatum, and she still doesn't decide anything.
Oh, come on!
I really just wish he would send her home.
Yeah.
Like, the entire time. Because she's really, 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 really selfish.
Yeah. But she's so poor!
I'm poor.
And her heart is confused.
I'm a 5. No one understands that I'm poor.
And my heart is confused. So instead, she reads Gregory Ilya's diary a little bit more, and he's even more despicable than she thought.
It just keeps getting worse.
He's a fake, doing whatever he can to gain power. He sold his daughter and forced her to marry someone she hated so he could become royalty. He made the castes to put people he hated into poverty and elevate the people he liked. America goes to talk to Maxon about this, and a helpful maid tells her where to find him because the maids all like her and want her to win. She finds him locked in a sultry embrace with Celeste, of all people. He spots her mid-makeout and comes to her room later. She yells at him, throws the bracelet he bought her at him, tells him she wants to go home and that she's done, but he won't let her leave. She's furious and decides if Maxon won't send her home, she'll do something terrible on the report, so she'll definitely get sent home. At this point, she's done a million things that should already have sent her home, and she still has not been sent home.
No. And I super hate that Maxon, you know, really gives her this ultimatum. Like, hey, you really need to make your decision here because, you know, lots of important things are going on, and I have to make this decision, and I want to marry you. But if you don't want to marry me, then say it. And now she says, I'm done with you. I want to go home. And he says, nope. My heart is confused. It was Maxon that time, though. With his little crown on.
Oh.
Okay, so we all really desperately hope that America is going to get sent home. No. America suggests in her presentation that they abolish the castes.
Shock.
The other girls want to do things like make schools better or create a minimum wage or get rid of the rebels or be pen pals. But America adamant on going out with a bang, makes the king so angry that he shuts down the report and demands she be sent home. And we all say, yay!
Yay, King Clarkson!
Nope. Maxon stands up to his father and says no.
Damn it! Now is not the time to stand up to the patriarchy.
The king then sees that she has Gregory Ilya's diary, and Maxon takes responsibility for it. It seems that Maxon has not read the diaries and knows nothing about Ilya. The king threateningly sends Maxon to his office, then tells Natalie that her sister was taken by rebels and is dead, then walks out.
Dude! What about the old, that's like, he it's like somebody followed him around and went, wop wop!
Yep.
Hashtag thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, really. Oh, guess what? Your sister's dead. Peace. Okay, so King Clarkson is awful. We know this by now. But really, he's showing his true colors here. America tries to comfort Natalie and apologize to the queen, but she's done for the night and goes back to her room. Are you shocked? She goes back to her room.
And all the maids cheer. Yay! Huzzah!
Yay!
They're so happy that she would stand up for them. She wants to go down to the gardens to think, but runs into Maxon when she passes the hospital wing. He's moving as if he's hurt, but he looks fine. As they're about to go their separate ways, a guard shouts that there are rebels and then gets shot. Ooh. Another guard pushes Maxon and he cringes, so America thinks he stabbed Maxon, but he didn't. Maxon isn't well enough to make it to the royal safe room, so he and America go to one for the servants instead. While locked up together, just the two of them, Maxon reveals that his father canes him. America cleans his wounds and they sit to have a conversation about what is going on with Chris and Celeste. They're having a conversation. Can we mark this moment on the calendar? Take a picture to make it last longer because they don't friggin' talk. They exchange words, but they do not talk.
It's amazing.
But you know what? At the end of the day, do you know what will happen?
My heart is confused. So Maxon tells her that he's using Celeste because she's using him. He will end up marrying Chris because his father wants Natalie to win, and Elise has no spine. He wanted America, even got permission to propose to her, but she's so goddamn stubborn and awful and selfish and pathetic. Wait. No.
I don't think some of those words are Maxon.
No, he didn't say that. That's us.
Oops.
Let me just go back a little bit. She started making mistakes and the king wanted her gone. And then they started getting further and further apart. He asks her if she ever loved him and she doesn't say that she did, but she implies it, at least. She realizes he'd do anything for her, literally take a beating, and she threw it all away over a stupid book. Then she realizes that the Northern Rebels are after Ilya's diaries. But they let that conversation drop, and then they make out and talk about nothing all night.
Oh, no, hold on. Let's not take a picture of them warm with the obviously having a decent conversation.
It's done. When they're finally released from the safe room, everyone is so happy that they're still alive. The rebels have started attacking the families of the elite, like Natalie's sister, to get the selection to end. So the king declares that no one is going home. That's kind of a big deal. But guess what? America says she is! Yeah, I am going home. Deal with it.
Fingers crossed, fingers crossed, fingers crossed.
And then she goes to her room. She goes to her room to gather her things. And her room is a mess. Her maids and Aspen are happy that she's still alive. Aspen sends her maids off so they can talk privately. And he says they'll be married as soon as possible. But she says she just wants space. He gets mad, of course, but agrees. My heart is confused.
As she's about to leave the palace, Maxon stops her. He tells her he convinced her father that she saved his life during the rebel attack and that he put her in her place. The king reluctantly agreed to let her stay and to send Natalie home instead. What was her sister being murdered and all this kind of a thing. Maxon tells her that she's going to have to trust him and be honest with him and stop being a petty brat. Okay. Sorry. That's not what he said.
That was us again.
That's us. But still stands. The sentiment still stands. He also tells her that the king is going to be tough on her. She agrees and decides she will fight for him. On her way back to her room...
No!
She's met by the king, who tells her she's ugly and pathetic and useless and worthless and garbage. And, you know, we agree, but we shouldn't because the king is a monster and a tyrant and, you know, nasty person. But anyway.
But at least he said all those things that we were all thinking the entire time.
It's nice to have that vent.
Yeah.
But she's still here, so she'd better start acting less pathetic. We're paraphrasing.
Really, though? Are we? Because that's pretty much what he says.
Yeah.
You're the worst person here. You're terrible. You're ugly. You're poor. No one likes you. You're pathetic. But you're still here, so you better fucking stop being so pathetic.
That I think that's a direct quote.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Page 196. He gets in her face and is despicable, like Amanda said, but she's still here and not leaving until Maxon sends her away. Mm-hmm. In her room, her maids are ecstatic that she's still here, and they're determined to help her win.
End of book part two.
My goodness. Boils your blood.
It really does, and let's face it, the only important things that came from this are that the rebels are looking for the books. Is there anything else?
She's made friends with the Italians.
Yes, also important. Okay.
I feel like we need to watch the YouTube version of The One. Oh, no, we didn't even watch the Elite one, did we, when
no,
we did
we
that
didn't.
Bit?
No, we didn't.
My heart is confused.
My heart is broken. Okay. So now we're on to The One.
Do you think in the Barbie thing, sorry, they go, my heart is happy.
I hope so.
It's canon now.
It is. Okay.
Let's go back to the room. Do you think we'll go back to our room? We haven't been there in a while.
Can we go back to the room? Yeah, we should go back to the room. The One begins with an immediate rebel attack. The girls are ushered to a safe room, but are nearly immediately let out again. They would have not even been sent to the safe room, because a guard did come and tell them never mind, but Sylvia insisted that she wouldn't let the girls go until the king said so. So, 20 minutes later, they're out. Back in her room, afterward, America finds a letter from her little sister May declaring that their older sister had a baby and she hopes that they'll all be together by Christmas. America decides she's ending the selection by putting on the sluttiest dress and hitting on Maxon, showing him that she desires him sexually. After his father told her at the end of the last book that Maxon's getting it from all angles from all the other girls. And I love this scene so much because it's so terrible. So when she gets there to the dining room, Maxon laughs at her because this is ridiculous. And then she's really embarrassed so much that she doesn't want to go to breakfast the next day. But, I mean, strawberry tarts. So she goes to breakfast.
And she's so purr. She's like, I'm at level 5. I need the food. I'm going to get for the food.
I'm so poor.
So poor. The king has to go on an emergency trip and doesn't invite Maxon to go with him, treating him like a child. Maxon is used to it, though, and knows that his father is never going to relinquish control. But he can't control everything, like sending America home, even though she should definitely be sent home by now. Maxon has a plan to get America back on top again and jokes with her, so everything's fine. And then she's in the women's room. It's been a while, so you know, it's nice for that change of scene. And the girls are all watching the guards run around shirtless. Oh my. And then they all talk about how far they've gone with Maxon, which makes America jealous again. But, you know, that's not new.
Nope.
She's sure she's still his favourite. I mean, come on, he's proposed like 6 million times and you're the one saying no. So I think it stands to reason you're his favourite love. Chris is still a tough contender. All Celeste wants is the crown, and Elise has been preparing her whole life for an arranged marriage, so she's sure that if Maxon picks her, then love will eventually come. So really, it's going to be Chris or America. Maxon's heart is confused.
Maxon's heart is confused, that's right. After some inevitable bickering between America and Maxon, she's awoken by a guard one morning who escorts her down to Maxon, and the two rebels she saw when she ran into the forest. They've come to speak specifically to Maxon and America. One of the rebels introduces himself as August Ilya.
Ooh.
He's a direct descendant of Gregory Ilya, and they've come to seek help from Maxon.
Ooh.
Oh. So it's not terrible that they're there?
Twist. Like it.
The Northern Rebels support Maxon as future king, but want him to get rid of the castes. They know that Gregory created them because he was a vindictive asshole, and they want them dismantled. They know that the Southern Rebels, if they do manage to take over, will make promises that things will be better, but will actually make things worse, or at least keep them the exact same. The only thing they want is for Maxon to marry America because they know she has their same ideals. Telling Maxon this, though, makes him angry because he hates being bullied and constantly told what to do. America stands up for him, kind of, and for herself, kind of, and leaves. The female rebel, Georgia, follows and tells her how great she is because she doesn't even want to be a princess at all. But they have someone else in mind if Maxon won't marry America. August and Maxon follow soon after, and the rebels leave with a promise of keeping in touch.
Friend me up on Facebook.
Hi.
Next, the Italians. Form a Facebook group. The selection connection.
Mm-mm. No. No. Mm-mm. Not doing it.
I'll just leave.
You need to go to your room. Or to the women's room.
Well, or I'm going to go to the women's room. Because Max and America fight again after she leaves the women's room later.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. The Queen chastises the girls a little for hating each other and tells them that after the competition is over, they will be best friends. Oh, like family. America feels emotional about this and leaves and walks into Maxon, where they have the same discussion that they have all the freaking time. She passes the king in a hallway later and he takes away her family stipend, so she finds a spot away from her bickering maids to write a letter home explaining the bad news. And that spot is neither her room nor the women's room.
It's got to be like halfway in between.
Pretty much is. It's like an alcove between.
Yeah.
There's still lots of tissues everywhere. Anne has been giving Lucy a hard time because Lucy is distracted by something. But America doesn't want to interfere with them. While she's away writing, she hears Chris and Maxon come down the hall and witness their first real mouth kiss.
I'm sorry, but have we mentioned that Chris has a tradition of not kissing until being engaged? Because
no, that sorry. Hasn't been mentioned yet.
Sorry, should have mentioned that before because mouth kiss is my new favorite thing. Sorry.
I like how we're breaking each other in this summary.
I'm sorry.
No, don't apologise. You laugh, I'll crack on. She also witnesses Chris telling Maxon that he is important to her.
Hmm.
Okay. America gets jealous, of course, but again, probably won't do anything about it, even though Maxon always implies he just wants someone to want him. Take a hint, love. We'll see if she listens this time.
She's not gonna listen.
My heart is dumb.
I'm poor. Okay. Before we can find out if she actually listens, there's a message from the Southern rebels during the report. They're gonna start attacking those in the same castes as the girls. Twos, threes, fours, and fives. Starting at the top and working their way down. Elise has nothing to say to the public about this. Celeste tells everyone to be safe. Chris suggests that twos and threes shelter fours and fives. And America suggests that they fight. The king stops her on her way out of the room, telling her that that was a bad idea. And she says that his ideas aren't so great either, and they have to do something. Otherwise, he won't have a country to rule anymore. She really just wants to be sent home, or punched in the face by the king.
Either works for me. Maxon stops by her room that night.
Oh, she's in her room.
He loves fighting with her, but doesn't want to argue anymore. He thinks that what she said in the report will put her in the top spot again, because people will see that she's strong and cares about them. They hold hands and he notices her aspen button bracelet, which he's noticed several other times before and looks concerned about it. He said before, it seems like America sometimes loves someone else. My heart is confused. And probably this bracelet had something to do with those feelings. He asks to spend the next day with her. They dance on the roof in the rain, and America finally realises that she loves him, but doesn't tell him. Idiot.
Shocked.
When they come back inside, they are met by the king, who is furious with Maxon for being outside with all the rebel threats. He ends their day together, pulling Maxon away, like a naughty child.
The next day, they're all in the women's room again, not really knowing what to do with themselves. Well, all except for Celeste. America goes to find a book to read and finds Celeste crying instead. She has a new magazine with America polling as the country's favorite again. Celeste is upset because she's just a model and her looks are going to fade and she's not going to be important anymore. She and America make amends and then she offers to break Chris's leg so she'll be out of the competition. And now everyone can finally see why we love her so much.
Yes.
On her way back to the women's room,
God.
America encounters Aspen, who is getting bigger because since becoming a soldier, he's been getting pumped full of injections. And I just imagine him, the way this was written, being like 9 feet tall, just like comically larger every time she sees him. Because she just, I guess Aspen's getting bigger again. Like he's just growing the entire time.
Who's in Umbrella Academy?
It's Luther!
Yeah. That's what I had in my mind.
Yep.
Welcome to that picture.
So good. So good. Okay. America asks for help.
Now I'm gone now.
Yeah, I can't stop picturing it. Like with a tiny head and really big muscly arms.
Harry!
Oh, he's gross. Okay. America asks Aspen for help getting to August Ilya, and of course, he'll do anything for her. Maxon got word to August, who set up a meeting place, and Aspen helps Maxon and America sneak out of the palace through the kitchens and a delivery truck. Maxon is a little suspicious of just why this Officer Ledger is so willing to help America, but doesn't ask any serious questions about it. And the escape goes off without a hitch.
The meeting with August and Georgia also goes well. They are pleased with America asking people to fight on the report and say they will fight too if Maxon can give them guns. He won't do that though, because they could just as easily attack the palace with guns if they wanted to, or his father could find out, which It probably would be worse, actually.
Probably worse. It's probably worse.
August tells them that the Southerners are not attacking many people now, but they'll probably start up again soon, and when they find out anything, he'll let Maxon know. August gives them a phone number to call if they need anything, and they leave. When they get back to the delivery truck, there are rebels with guns that attack. They recognise America, so she runs, but gets shot in the arm. She hides in an alley and is found by a young girl who recently became an aide and is now a prostitute. She offers America a prostitute job, but luckily Maxon and Aspen come by before too long and they're all, including Paige the tiny prostitute, go back to the palace. Just adopt random aides everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
In Aspen's room, Maxon sees an unsigned love letter written by America a few years ago pinned to the wall and comments how it must feel to have someone so devoted to you and write you love letters. Rears eyebrow at this point. Aspen leaves the room. They send Paige to work with Mallory, also known as Marley, and bring Anne in to stitch America's up. She doesn't ask questions. What a good maid.
What a good maid Anne is.
Check out America in a different room in the palace.
I know. Aspen's room with a creepy love letter that she wrote him years and years ago pinned to his wall. Yeah.
I bet there's red string attached to it as well.
Ugh, it's gross. The next day, America feels like crap and is hungover because the only thing they had to dull her gunshot pain was liquor. But she manages to make it down for lunch. Sylvia declares that they will be having a televised tea party soon, and that they each have to invite two guests. America is certain that the king planned this to make her look useless, but Celeste offers to invite more of her influential friends if America can't find anyone to invite. And we all love her because she's not so terrible if she's on your side. Back in her room,
mean girl on your side, don't you?
Yeah. Back in her room, America asks Anne if there's any way she can repay her for her gunshot sewing help, and she asks if America will see if Aspen has any interest in her since they're such good friends.
Ooh,
America.
Awkward.
America, however. However awkward that is delighted to do so, which means she's definitely not in love with him anymore at all. Her heart's not confused anymore.
My heart is happy.
Maxon comes by later, and they almost tell each other that they love each other, but of course, they do not.
Communicate, people.
Instead, America talks to him about who she intends to invite to the tea party. Nicoletta, the Italian princess that America impressed so much at the reception she and Chris put on that gave her personal phone number, and Georgia. They secretly talk during the tea party about the Italians funding the Northern rebels.
Ooh, sneaky.
Mm.
Next comes something called the convicting, where the elite will have to be sentenced to death. No. Damn it.
If only!
Wishful thinking there. It's where the elite will have to sentence a thief to jail time. America doesn't want to do it because she's seen firsthand what people will do when they are hungry.
I'm poor. I'm a five. You don't understand. I'm poor and hungry. I can't possibly do my job because I'm too poor.
She asks... It's funnier when you look her in the eyes while she's doing it. She asks Queen Amberlee to let her convict someone who's done something actually worth being in prison for, but the Queen says she needs to do this most of all because people think she's running wild. She lets America know, in not so many words, that the King doesn't want her there anymore, so she needs to be perfect. And, of course, she disappears. Instead of convicting the man to prison for life for stealing clothes for his children, which definitely doesn't warrant a life sentence and is definitely the king's way of punishing the man for probably being a rebel sympathiser and punishing America because he hates her, She takes off the jewellery given to her by Maxon to wear to the ceremony and the necklace her father gave her, gives it to the man and tells him to pay his debt to the king. The watching crowd applauds, but the king is, of course, furious. But no one else is.
Hmm.
The king suggests to Maxon that they send all these reject girls home and have a new selection. Huzzah! Of course, he's not going to do that, though. Also, the public absolutely adores America for standing up to the king. It seems most everyone is tired of him. All the girls come to America's room to check on her because they knew King Clarkson would do something despicable to her. They all have doubts about themselves and become closer than ever before. Maxon interrupts them to talk to America, but again, they don't really get anywhere.
Now that all the girls are getting along, they spend a day in the women's room.
Can they not do something a little different?
Nope. Well, I mean, this time they do give each other makeovers, and they include the queen, too. And they borrow a camera from Maxon to photograph everything, so that's kind of different.
I hope it's done montage style, like 80s movie montage style.
Mm-hmm. I hope so too. Then America is summoned to the king, who is furious that the Italians like her and is sure she's done something to them. She says she only showed them kindness. Then King Clarkson tries to force her to read propaganda to the casts, telling them to stay with their own kind and ignore everyone in the other casts.
But I'm a five, I'm poor, I can't read, I'm hungry.
She refuses, thank goodness. The king says she must not love Maxon, and she must be there for ulterior motives.
The food, obviously. We've established this since book one.
Yes. And if she won't read this propaganda because she doesn't love Maxon, then he's kicking her out in 3 days, right before Christmas.
Oh my god, this threat again. Just do it, man.
She leaves, and Maxon follows her. But instead of telling him she loves him, and that his father is clearly a manipulative ass bag, they fight. Again.
My heart is argumentative.
I'm poor.
Now it's Christmas Eve and Maxon invites America to see his room. Oh!
It's his room! It's his room instead!
They look at all the photographs he's taken and many are of her. She asks if he'd want to take photographs if he wasn't the prince, and yes, of course he would. She tells him that he'd be a five.
You'd be poor.
And hungry.
And hungry and sad and confused.
All he wants is for her to tell him she loves him. And if she does, he'll end everything. But for some reason, she believes she'll never have all of him until he sends everyone else home. But that is seriously what he's trying to do if she does tell him she loves him!
Rage!
Okay. He's about to try and coerce her with a makeout session, but then a guard comes in and tells them that America's father has died.
Oh
shit. She goes home for the funeral, but the king won't let Maxon go with her. Maxon sends Aspen and several other guards with her, and Lucy too. They have the funeral, and then America spends time playing with May and dressing up Lucy.
America's mother gives the older children letters written to them by their father years before he died. He had a known heart condition and knew he didn't have much time left. America's letter, however, has had recent additions. He's proud of her, of course, but he also reveals that he was the one who told August and Georgia about Gregory Ilya's diaries because he was a northern rebel, too.
Shock.
He didn't say it outright, though, obviously, but he definitely was a rebel. 100%. Kota, her older brother, is an asshole and is upset that their father left him the house because he considers it a dump. He orders Aspen to serve him a drink, since he's a 6, but oh no no, he's a 2 now. When America stands up for him, Kunta asks if their affair is still going on, shocking everyone. She says that yes, they used to date and were going to get married, but then they broke up, and now she has Maxon, but she's sure that if Kunta knows, others might know too. So when they go back to the palace, she's going to tell Maxon everything. Don't hold your breath. May was surprised to find out about them, and Lucy is in tears. America talks to her sister Kenna, who kind of shames her for trying to keep Aspen as a safety net. Good job,
Thank
Kenna.
You.
Thank you. Finally, Thank someone you. Says something. On the plane ride back, Aspen tries to tell America something after talking to Lucy for a long time, but she shuts him down.
As always, because she doesn't know how to have a conversation.
Mm-mm. No, and she thinks that every conversation is about her.
Self-centered. Bitch.
Not about you this time, babe.
Back at the palace, America tries to get to her room. Shock. But a maid asks her why she's not going to the reception. She's led to a bustling party with all the girls who were sent home and finds out that will be either her or Chris marrying Maxon. Ooh,
oh!
The elite have become two.
Oh!
She and Chris talk privately and decide that they are going to be happy for one another no matter what. But then America notices that Chris has a star necklace, which is just like the stars hidden in her father's letter. Ooh, which are just like the stars on George's jacket. Chris is an older rebel! America pulls her to the bathroom and confronts her, but Chris says she loves Maxon, and yeah, she's a rebel, you know, whatever. And, you know, she was, like, put into the selection on purpose, but, you know, whatever. But she really does love him and thinks they could do great things.
America goes to her room. And Maxon comes in later, tells her that she's the one. And they make out, and then he spends the night in her room. When he wakes up to go back to his own room, they laugh and play together, and Aspen comes dashing in, thinking she's in trouble. She's embarrassed, but Maxon brushes it off, and they talk some more, and then he leaves. Aspen comes back in and shouts at her for sleeping with Maxon, and she gets close to him and says she didn't. But then Maxon comes back down the hall with Chris and was going to talk to both of them together to break the news to Chris, but now he's sending America home because she's been lying to him the entire time, and clearly she loves Aspen. Finally. But really this time? Really this
yes.
time? It was a mistake.
Dude.
This time was a mistake.
I don't care. This
I just
is,
think it's funny. The timing is terrible.
This is, timing is terrible. It's absolutely hilariously ironic. But I'm just glad he's finally sending
finally,
her home.
Finally. So they try to explain, but Maxon doesn't listen and tells America to get her maids to fix her up nicely to go home. And we all kind of love him at this time. When he came in to see her, when she first got back, he brought her an envelope that she only opens now, and it's full of silly love letters that are all the more heartbreaking now that she's going home. He also gives her a house.
That's nice.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. Gives her a picture of a house, and she's like, oh, that's a nice picture. Did you take it? And he's like, I'm not giving you the fucking picture, you idiot. I'm giving you a house. It's for your family to live in.
But she would know that because she's a babe.
I'm poor.
She's so poor.
I thought you were giving me a photograph.
At the celebration the next day, where Maxon will reveal that he's marrying Chris, he's pretty terrible to America. She notices that everyone seems on edge and that the guards look a little unkempt. Maxon says something awful to America again, forcing her to smile until she's out of his life. So she's glancing all around the room, trying not to look at anyone for fear of crying. Then she watches as the scruffy guards whip out red sashes and guns and shoots Celeste in the back of the head.
Yikes!
And we all scream.
Ugh.
The Southern rebels have snuck in and are shooting people left and right and centre and up and down and in the face. One comes close and is about to shoot America, but Maxon jumps in front and takes the bullet.
Why?
Aspen comes to help and takes a screaming Chris away. Maxon apologises for almost ruining their lives and tells her he loves her and will love her until his last breath. Which may actually be coming sooner than he would like.
Yeah.
Womp womp. Aspen comes back and tries to take Maxon, but he insists he take America instead and keep her safe. They creep down the hall toward a safe room. Aspen checks a guard. He's dead. So he takes his gun and gives it to America. As they go down to a dead end looking for a safe room, a red sash comes around the corner and America shoots. Aspen tries to tell her to do something, but then shoves her into a safe room and leaves. It's all kicking off.
America tries to shoot her way out of the safe room but fails.
It's kind of the whole point of the safe room, though.
Kind of the whole entire fucking point of the safe room.
I mean,
room.
If it worked, it's not a fucking safe room.
No. August and Gavril Fide open her door later, and she realizes that Gavril wears a star and is also a rebel. They take her to the hospital when she starts freaking out, trying to find out if Maxon and Aspen are still alive. Aspen is. She finds him sitting in the hospital too, and he tells her that she saved his life, but he doesn't love her anymore.
Womp womp. My heart is
broken. It's broken this time. It's broken because she assumes that Maxon is dead, and she's sad about it. But Aspen tells her that he's not dead, and he's now the king, because both King Clarkson and Queen Amberly were killed.
Oh, shit.
The Northern rebels really helped them a lot, and if it wasn't for them, more people would be dead. Then Lucy comes in and smooches Aspen all over. And America sneaks away to find Maxon. He's in his room, all bandaged up. When she comes in, Maxon dismisses everyone in his room and puts aside the paperwork he's studying. He instructs America to look at another set of papers. These have an outline for dismantling the castes, working from the bottom up. While she's reading the papers over and over again, he places a ring on top and proposes. Of course she says yes. They have a lovely wedding with Marley as a bridesmaid and her husband standing with Maxon. It's a good sign for the future for them to be there. Aspen walks America down the aisle and gives her away. She knows that her life with Maxon will be tough, but they will have so much more than a happily ever after. The end. We're going to go to the women's room for a moment, and you need to listen to this announcement. Please remember that Fictional Hangover is a free podcast, and always will be. If you'd like to support the show, stop listening to us for just a few minutes. Become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, then come back. If you can't do this monthly but still want to support us because you just like the show so much, head over to Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover to drop us a one-time tip. Your support on Patreon and Ko-fi will help us bring you more spoiler-filled discussions, book character cosplays, and ridiculous content you know and love. Now, back to the episode. Back in the room.
Back in the women's room.
Back in America's room.
Oh, dear me.
Back in the women's room. In America's room again.
Kleenex everywhere. So many tears. But it's okay, because my heart is happy.
My heart is confused. I'm poor.
Oh, delightful.
not a terrible ending.
It all kicked off at the end, didn't it?
It did. It did. And that's kind of my thoughts about this series, because like we said earlier, we could do without book two. We don't need book two at all. We only need to find out that the Northern Rebels were looking for Gregory Ilya's diaries and that America makes friends with the Italians. That's the only thing. That's the only important thing that happens really in book two. So we could have really gotten a lot more out of book three, and it could have become like a huge, you know, dystopian series, and it would have been really great. Like, she's sneaking out and getting shot and fighting rebels. That's awesome. Let's keep this going. Nope.
Yeah. I would have loved, absolutely loved, America to have gotten kicked out, obviously. We know this.
Yes.
But to have gotten kicked out and joined the rebels. And she can marry Maxim at the end. That's fine. But, you know, she's joined the rebels and she's fighting for the cause that she's basically telling everybody else to do all the hard work for.
It would have been so much greater if she got kicked out. Even if when Maxim says he's sending her home, there's a little bit more here. Let's stretch it out. So Maxim says, I'm sending you home, even though I just told you last night that you're the one and we're going to get married. But now I see you with Aspen and I see that you love him. So get the fuck out. And then she comes in during the celebration where he's going to propose to Chris with the rebels. I mean, the rebels are the bad rebels are already there. The Southern rebels are already there. But she comes in like guns a-blazing, killing all the Southern rebels. Would have been perfect. Because she got sent home, but she's, I'm not going to leave you. I'm not going to leave you, Maxim, because I love you. And then she just, like, kills everyone. And Celeste survives.
Yes, that's important. We need Celeste to survive.
Yeah. And then Celeste pulls a gun from her thigh holster.
Yeah.
And also shoots everyone.
Yeah.
And they kill the king and queen, because they still need to die.
Yeah.
And then they have a passionate embrace. Celeste and Chris get together.
That was going to say that. I'm shipping those two. That's what's happening in my head.
They get together.
Thank you. I'm glad you're on the same page.
Yeah. And then Maxim and America live happily ever after. Better ending.
Yes. Yes. Totally agree. 100% agree. Completely.
But still, this ending wasn't so bad.
Yeah. It was more of the fairy tale ending with a bit of rebel insurgency, but
yeah.
It felt like with the Elite, like you say, we all needed those two things. It could have been completely cut out.
Yep.
And then all of the actual, like, gritty action sequences, you know, the real meat to the bones of this particular story was just kind of shoved in the last quarter of the book.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, it could have easily been teased out a little bit more. And I think if the selection and the one were kind of combined together, and it was a thicker book in three parts, or two parts, it would have been better. I would have much preferred the story if America wasn't in the ball ground from front to end, if she actually did something, if she actually got her hands dirty rather than keep going, oh, I'm a five, I'm poor, I'm hungry, and expect everybody else to do it for her.
Would have been better.
And it annoyed the life out of me how, okay, King Clarkson's an asshole. He's an absolute dickwipe. We know this. You know, he's an abusive father and no doubt an abusive leader. But we've said it before, she does not equate King Clarkson, Queen Amberley, and Maxim with leadership.
Right.
Which is why she's constantly going, I don't want to do the trials. I don't want to do this. You can't make me do that. It's like, love, if you want the man, you need the job. They go hand in hand. They're intrinsically linked. Even if you were to tear down the caste system, you are still in a leadership position and you are still in a position of power and responsibility. And you are going to have some shitty decisions to make.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sunshine and roses and walks in the garden. You don't just go between your bedroom and the women's room all the time. There's other things that you need to do. I honestly don't think, as much as I like the Sylvie character in the selection, I do not think that they are being prepared for the role of princess slash queen enough.
No, it's like they're being prepared to be a figure in the palace, but not to do any of the actual work that they have to do. Like, Sylvia, should she have even been a character at all? I feel like this should be the queen's responsibility, and the queen needs to be teaching what they're actually going to have to do.
I suspect perhaps maybe it might have been the queen's job, but it's kind of excused away that the queen doesn't want to get close to any of the girls because she knows she's not going to be able to call them all daughter. She's only going to be able to keep the one. And if the one that she grows close to is not selected, then, you know, she's delicate sensibilities of the womanhood and all that.
Yeah, and if you read her short story, you find out that she's very ill. So maybe that could have something to do with it too.
Exactly. And there will always be an etiquette and protocol liaison. There will be somebody who always teaches them, who hovers in the background to make sure that what is, you know, going on is going on perfectly. There's always going to be that person. I mean, it's in every single book and movie and TV show that involves royalty. There's always the person there. So Sylvia's role is there, but she's probably given a bit more prominence and a bit more credit than she needs to get. She doesn't prepare them in any way.
No.
It's more frivolous. Like, oh, let's do a tea party.
Yeah. You know, I thought that she was going to be a rebel.
Sylvia.
Yeah.
That, again, would have been a good twist.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine that Gavril is.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. But I feel like it was, you know, leading up the entire time to her being a rebel too. Especially because, like, in the first one, when they have the first real bad rebel attack and they're all in the safe room. Yeah. And Sylvia is in her, like, takes America to her room, or comes into America's room and sees that she's packing all her stuff up. I feel like she was in there to see what was in her room. You know, because the rebels are in there and they were looking through stuff. I feel like she is a rebel. Like, did they get what they were coming for? You know, like, what's in here? What do I need to know? What am I looking out for? But no, she's just like, here, use this phone. But I really thought they were planting, because she was always there.
Yeah.
At key moments. She was
always in the background. Or do you think it might have come down to, well, we need somebody who's close to the selection process. We need to be in the competition. And do you think it came down to, well, the seeds have been planted that it's Sylvia, but then the twist is it's Chris. So it could be, for me, one of two things. It was Chris all along, but Sylvia was the red herring. Or change the mind.
Yeah.
Seeds have been planted, but actually I think it works out better, or it might be better for the story if it's really Chris,
and then we just show that, yeah, there is also someone who is working in the palace. It's Gavril. He didn't really do anything the entire time, but it was Gavril.
Yeah. I don't mind Gavril being a rebel. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, he was just like the game show quiz news presenter person who did nothing.
Yeah, it would have been better, I think, if it had been Sylvia.
Yeah, it wasn't even like in the reports where he was determinedly keeping the camera on America while she's spouting off all this stuff that's enraging the king and what the rebels want to hear.
Yeah.
He wasn't even like, no, we'll keep it on, let's keep going. What, tell us more, America. It was just, he did nothing. I don't even think he had lines at that point. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing that, though, there were some really good scenes in the one. I quite like the 80s girly sleepover montage sequence where they kind of like...
Yeah, that was fun.
I like that. That was fun.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that the Cut Queen Amberly involved in it.
Yes, I like that she was involved a little bit more. And there was a couple of times where Amberly, like, kind of pulls America aside and says, hey, you need to do this. And she, like, jokingly calls her mom one time, and then Amberly, like, looks at her. And you just think, like, oh, I'm in trouble because I said, okay, mom, sure, whatever. But she's like, no, you will probably be calling me that. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
Yeah.
I liked that. I liked...
Yeah.
I liked Amberly.
Yeah. I feel like I would like to know more about Amberly, but I'm not sure if I want to explore it or just make it up in my own head.
I think you should make it up in your own head because, spoiler alert, I read her story and it was nothing like it should have been.
Oh. Okay.
But I don't want to talk about that because...
No, we're not talking about that anyway.
It was really bad.
Yeah. We like spoilers, but we're not talking about that.
No, and I don't want to sully Queen Amberly's memory.
Ooh, it's that bad. People's curiosity will now be piqued, but, you know, do not be tempted.
Maybe read it. Maybe read the short story. Don't listen to it.
Read the short story, loan it from a library. If your local library doesn't have it, suggest that they get it in.
Yeah. Anyway, what else? I liked some stuff.
Yeah? Actual stuff.
I really liked Celeste's moment where she finally reveals why she's terrible.
Yeah.
And I liked her giant list of everything that she had done to everyone, which included putting glass in Elise's shoes and also sneaking bleach into her shampoo bottle, which was hilarious.
It was really funny.
But when you find out that she's in the competition because she's just a model, and you're like, oh, fuck you, Celeste, you're just a model. But she's like, no, that's all I have. I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't act, I'm only pretty. That's all I've got going for me. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then she's like, I'm pretty. And then America says, I'm poor. And that's their conversation. But I really did like that. And then as that little rendezvous that they had is ending, she offers to break Chris's legs. Yes. Yeah, you're good. We like you. And then she gets shot.
Yeah, I didn't like her death. I didn't like that Celeste was killed. None of the other selection girls lived, apart from Marley, but even then just, like, changed identities. That felt a little harsh.
Yeah, because they were all there, weren't they?
I don't know.
Because they were all there for that party. So surely they were still there, because that was the next day.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. But then it was was it later? No, that was...
It was the same day. It was like the next day.
That was it, yeah. So they were all there. Why'd Celeste get it?
Because we liked her. 34 other people, including America, that could have gotten shot in the head.
It would have made more sense to kill Elise if you're going to kill somebody. Because she has ties to New Asia.
Wild bullet, though, wasn't it, really? I mean, was it aimed at Celeste? We don't know.
Yeah, it was. They shot her directly in the back of the head.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a stray.
She was a non-event character. She was a character that hovered in the background.
Yeah,
and there simply to say, oh, she has New Asia ties, and that's it. That is it.
Yeah, but she would have been the perfect person to kill then. Mm-hmm. To spur on the new Asians and get them angry too and have them come and...
Completely 100% agree. But to get the feels, you have to have an emotional connection to a character.
I see.
And nobody
gave
a shit about Elise. Because she was just a hovering in the background. She was a red shirt.
Yeah, see, I thought that you were like... I misunderstood what you were saying.
Yeah, no. Elise is a red shirt.
Yeah.
Celeste should not be shot.
No, there was no point in her being shot at all, except for the fact that the author made us like her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Imagine if she'd thrown, like, the hen party.
What's that again? What's a hen party?
The bride's bachelorette.
Oh, okay. That would have been so much fun. She could have invited all of her model stripper friends, because you know she has some.
And she would have invited that really, like, well-known singer, who I pictured in my head as Lady Gaga.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, meat suit era Lady Gaga, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would have been an epic bachelorette.
Yeah, it would have been really great. Oh, speaking of dressing in a way.
Oh, I know what scene you're going to mention, because it was friggin' hilarious.
I love...
Did it happen in her bedroom by any chance?
No, I believe this did not happen in her room or in the women's room. This is where they were eating, right? And she... The king has just told her that she's ugly and pathetic and, like, everyone else is sleeping with Max and all over the place and she's just a prude and she's awful. And she's like, I'm gonna put on the sluttiest fucking dress I can find and try to seduce Maxim. And he just thinks she's hilarious because she's so awful at everything that she's doing. Loved it.
Epic fail on America's part. It was hilarious.
It was so good.
Those scenes, it didn't change my opinion of America, but it certainly endeared Maxim towards us a bit more.
Yes.
I mean, we know from last week's discussion of the selection, I like Maxon as a character. I think he's a
right.
very good character.
Yes.
But those little moments of humour and, like, calling her out, you know, I can see other people might have gone down the obvious route of it's kind of working. You know, the girl's the girl is throwing herself at the boy. The boy just takes advantage of the situation. But I kind of like the fact that he was like, love, this is not you. This is not working. This is comedy gold. Let me take a picture to make it last longer because lol. And I like the fact that he called her out on it.
Yeah. Like, hey, you look pretty, but this is not you. Like, I like you for you, not your bosoms and everything that's happening right now and whatever this outfit is.
Can you just put on some jeans or something and just be yourself and that would be...
Could you put on your pants that I gave you, please?
Yeah, that you never wear.
Pants. Anyway.
So, speaking of America and Maxon,
mm-hmm.
they don't speak.
No, it's so frustrating.
It got too much. It was... The love triangle lasted too long, again. That should have been killed off in book two.
I really think that Aspen was trying to tell her for a long time that he doesn't like her anymore and he's actually got something going on with Lucy, especially... Or I guess it probably took place after she got shot, which he and Lucy were probably already together by that point. But when she's like, hey, Anne asked me to ask you what you think. Do you like her? Check yes or no. And he's like, Anne? Why Anne? Why not Lucy? So, like, I feel like he wanted to tell her for a long time. Like, hey, I don't like you anymore.
Yeah, I think it should have been... It should have been nipped in the bud in book two.
Well, like, sure, properly, it should have been.
Properly
but
nipped in the bud in book two. Because book two was just, my heart is confused too much. It went on far too much.
It really did. But I also feel like she just kept trying to shut him down anytime that he wanted to tell her something.
Yeah.
She always assumed it was, I'm trying to tell you that I love you. But really, it's, hey, I like you're my first love, you're my best friend, but I don't like you like that anymore. But she never let him speak.
Yeah. And she never actually, when she said, I'm going to go and tell Maxon everything about Aspen, she should have not crawled into the bed. And, okay, nothing really happened apart from, like, a make-out sesh, but she should have, like, only used her mouth for talking and not smooching.
Yeah.
It really frustrated me. It's the same with a lot of books. My biggest criticism is they do not talk. And I know half the plot point is the fact that the characters do not converse, but it's getting to a point where I'm finding the entire thing intolerable and it'll actually turn me against a book because of the lack of communication.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of love triangles. I don't mind them if they're done correctly. If they're done properly, they're fine. The love triangle in the selection is a huge problem for me. I do not enjoy it. Probably because one of the points of the triangle is a giant ass hat. And the other point of a triangle is a giant ass hat with boobs.
I was about to say, like, are you talking about America or are you talking about Aspen?
Because American Aspen can both fuck off for all I care. I do not like either of the characters. Maxon is the only one I do like. And we've already said about what would probably be a better outcome. But their relationship would have been a lot better if she wasn't going, oh, I'm not going to say I love you first. Why not?
Especially Why? Because that's the point of the whole thing. Like, he's got all of these girls here all over the place. And he tells her even, if you tell me how you feel, I will end it. But I'm not going to end it. I'm not going to pick you if you don't actually love me. So if you will just tell me so I know for sure, then it's over and we can get married and everything will be fine.
He says but that she to doesn't do so that. Much. I feel sorry for him. She's leading him on this merry journey, constantly asking for more time. And at first in the selection, it's fine because it just means that the stipend can get back to her family. They're in a comfortable position. There's people who want to steer in the selection again for similar-esque reasons for that security that's involved in being in the competition. Mm-hmm. And I get that. So you draw it out for a little bit. You establish your relationships, your friendships and the potentials. But it gets to a point where it's too much. And then the whole sending her home doesn't happen no matter what she does, even though she basically breaks every single one of the rules.
Yes.
It turns into a joke.
She even hits Celeste. A girl got sent home 20 pages into the first one because she hit Celeste. And she flies across the room and they have a violent cat fight. And the queen's like, nah, you're not going to tell my son. You're going to go to the hospital wing instead. Why is she getting so much special treatment?
Yeah. It's a similar case to other books where I don't understand what makes the leading lady character so special. I don't see it. And I'm sorry to all of the people who absolutely adore this series. I can see why people enjoy it, because it's nice escapism. It doesn't require a lot of thought. You know, you can just pick it up and you can enjoy it, delve into the world, pine over Maxon, hit Aspen, if you like me. So I get it. I just don't get America. I really don't get America.
Yeah. I don't get her either. It's really frustrating. I mean, I wanted to shout all last week about just send her home. Just send her home because she's terrible. She breaks every rule. Send her home. She's awful. She's not worthy of being a princess or a queen. She doesn't think she is, and she's right.
Yeah.
She's not a good person. And the whole, when Georgia tells her, like, that's why you would be good at this position, because you don't actually want it. Like, I guess.
That's such a stereotypical line.
It is, but, ugh, she was the worst.
Yeah, it's like saying, you're the same, you and I.
Oh, I let out the breath I didn't realize I was holding. Although, in this time, that did happen, but it was, Maxon let out the breath that I didn't realize he was holding. So it wasn't her. It wasn't her, so it was fine.
Ah, you see that slight twist you did there? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But I agree with you. Like, I don't get it. I don't get why America is the one she shouldn't be. But I do enjoy the series quite a bit. It's fun. It's funny. There are funny things that happen. But, yikes, I don't like America.
Yeah. Yeah. Her brother is an absolute asshat, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was the worst. Oh, I hate that guy. I wanted to punch him in the face.
I kind of half wanted him to, like, at the funeral, to be, actually, you know, I keep you at arm's length. I come across as an absolute asshole, but actually, it's because I'm a rebel.
And that would have been great. I'm trying to protect you. Nope.
Dad knows. Because, you know, he's a rebel too.
Nope.
Surprise!
I do like, though, that, you know, in the first one, Kota writes her a letter and is like, hey, have you talked to the prince about me? Because, you know, I'm an artist and I'm super famous as an artist. He's a successful artist as opposed to an unsuccessful artist, as we talked about last time in the Would You Rather game. But I like that in the after the funeral and he's like garbage about their dad leaving him the house, she says, you know what? I did tell the prince about you. And he's like, who's this guy? He's a jerk. I don't care about him at all. He's awful.
She did nicely put him in his place.
Yeah. So that was fun. That was good. But man, yeah, he was a jerk.
Did she not know about the niece? Like, did she not know her sister was pregnant and then suddenly there was a baby there? I'm like, hang on.
Maybe
I felt like I missed that bit.
Maybe the baby was born early or something. Maybe there's something there that we were missing.
Yeah, I thought maybe being lower caste, the life expectancy or infant mortality might have been higher. So don't really announce it until the birth's taken place, perhaps. Because I'm a level 5, I'm poor.
I'm poor.
So I thought it might have been tied to that.
Could have been.
Yeah. Just felt
like, or they just have so many children all the time. You're like, oh, she's had another baby. Oh, I didn't even realize she was pregnant again because she's had a litter.
Yeah, she had 3 in the time period in the 5 months that you were in the selection.
She
had 3 kids.
Oh, prolific. So, you know who? I was almost about to segue into favorite characters, but then I decided, no, I don't want to talk about that right now because I want to talk about how much I hate King Clarkson and how terrible he was. But I also really appreciated the fact that he told America how awful she is. I liked that, but he's an abusive tyrant and he's not going to relinquish his throne to King or to Maxon. We see this coming. He's terrible. He's garbage. But tells America that she is also terrible. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
Oh, I just thought of something else. Speaking of King Clarkson and America's dad, I kind of thought that he had her father killed.
I thought that for a moment. I thought that was the case, not the heart condition that came out of nowhere.
No,
I thought King Clarkson had
The heart condition does come into play later in the other two books in this series that are like the tag-along books. That does come up. So it is important, but yeah, I feel like it would have been a perfect opportunity for King Clarkson to get rid of America because he knows Maxon's not ever going to make her leave. And he also knows that she loves her father. And he also has the ability to put people in jail for life if they've wronged him in whatever slight way. So why not have her father killed? Because I knew that is what happened, but no.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that's what happened. When she went back home, it would have transpired that it wasn't as reports are being made.
Yeah, and that would have made perfect sense as to why he wouldn't let Maxon go. Yeah. Because he's trying to get rid of America.
Yeah.
I want to send her home. I want to send her back to her family. And hell, have her killed when she gets there.
And that's a perfect opportunity for her to have left the competition and joined the rebels and then come back later as a rebel and killed all the bad guys and go, Maxon, I love you. And it's America. I love you. Let's get married. Okay.
Yeah, it would have been great. Another great opportunity for things to change. And she did just find out that her father was a rebel, so it would be perfect. She's like, oh, well, screw all these guys. The king is an awful jerk, and he killed my father, who's a rebel, so now I'm going to become a rebel in his place.
I'm Batman.
No, she's Mulan in this case.
Yeah. I watched live action of Mulan the other way. Kind
of. Yeah. It would have been much better if it wasn't trying to be Mulan, though. Would have been a good story all on its own. Doesn't need to be Mulan. Especially with the witch bird. Loved her.
Totally shipped the two of them together, actually.
Yep. Okay, so
do we need to discuss favourite character. I mean, is it pretty obvious that we adore Celeste and always?
Yes, it is obvious. But can I tell you that, you know, I've read this before, and everyone knows that I've read this before because we've covered it on the podcast before. But I didn't realize so much how much I enjoyed Natalie and that I just imagined Karen from Mean Girls. You watched Mean Girls finally, right?
I did. I own it on Amazon.
I just imagine her as Karen, like, my breasts can tell when it's raining. And because there's one scene in particular where, like, somebody's sad about something and she's like, do you want some pie? Like, oh, let's go eat.
Do you think
Taco
her breasts
Bell.
Can tell when the rebels are going to come?
I think they can.
They can tell that we need to go to the safe room.
Yeah. Let's go eat at Taco Bell. This is
what the dystopian future is missing in this iteration. A Taco Bell.
A Taco Bell, yes. But you have to wear your ball gown when you go to Taco Bell.
Exactly. When we go to Taco Bell, we will be top to bottom ball gown.
Yes. And then we will eat a rat burger later in the sewers.
Yeah.
And also have a murder death kill.
If we don't have a murder death kill, are we really doing it right?
No. No, you're not. We don't need to talk about favorite character.
No, it's established.
Well, even though we kind of just did.
Yeah. Surprises.
Surprises, yes. Were you surprised by anything?
No, I don't think so. Probably at a push left over from the first book. Is that everybody is so, America, fuck yeah!
Yeah, I'm really surprised that she didn't get sent home. Would have been better.
I mean, Marley getting caned was probably...
That was pretty bad.
It was more unexpected than surprise. I was expecting repercussions. Because it was obvious.
I think it would have been better. Even though we know why the caning happened, would have been better if she had gotten killed, because we know that that's the punishment for treason.
Yeah, because it's now established that Maxon will bend the law and the rules.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as much as Marley was a nice character and I liked her well enough, it annoyed me. They have all these rules and they do not...
They don't follow a single
follow rule. Them. And it just defies the point.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't find anything. I was surprised by anything.
I feel like I thought of something earlier that I was kind of surprised about.
Was it the actual amount of times she spent in her room, the women's room, and freaking crying?
No. It wasn't that. No, I can't remember what it was at all. I'm surprised that King Clarkson didn't have her father murdered, but that's not really what I was trying to think of. I don't know. I don't remember when it was, but I feel like there was something that was at least halfway surprising.
Probably Celeste's murder was probably the most surprising, or probably the most gutting.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, she or... Natalie or Elise or Chris should have survived, but they just seem to be completely wiped out.
You know, I was also surprised that, and this was not mentioned in the summary, but at the end, when obviously Aspen and Lucy are together, and Lucy was her maid, so she's going to quit because she's going to go off and live with Aspen, and that's fine. But that Anne also just disappeared, I'm really surprised by that. I don't think
my
that fits.
My heart is broken.
My heart is broken. I don't feel like that fits her character.
Yeah.
And that Mary was the only maid that was left.
I'm surprised that there wasn't more character development for the elite girls and for the maids. The kind of established characters, you know, that would be named in the credits. They would have lines, but we don't know much about them. And I think there was a missed opportunity. And I'm surprised by that because it seemed that it was happening. It started with the sleepover montage type thing. And it just didn't go anywhere. It fell a bit flat, and I would have liked to have had a bit more of them in. So I'm quite surprised that that wasn't developed a little bit further.
Yeah. I wish I could remember the other thing that I was thinking of. Maybe it'll come to me later and I'll just shout about it. I'm not sure.
You have the power of editing on your side.
That's true. I do. So then that brings us to Would You Rather time. It's time.
My heart is happy. On social media, we asked you a question. And that question is, would you rather be trapped in a safe room with a ton of other people or by yourself? Now remember, if you are on Facebook, you can join our Would You Rather group and you can answer and vote. We encourage you to do so. It is not a spam group. It is just a voting group and it's just for some fun. So on Facebook, 37% of you said safe room with a ton of people. And 63% said you'd rather be by yourself. On Instagram, 35% said safe room with a ton of people. And 65% said by yourself. And on Twitter, because Twitter likes to be contrary, 71% said safe room with a ton of people. And 29% said by yourself. Twitter.
Twitter, come on.
And we do have some comments to read out. Lord Sock on Twitter said, a bunch of people because if they break in, you can hide more effectively since it's harder to find you when there's like 100 others.
That's a good idea, Lord Sock.
It is. It's a safety net. It's a plan. Lord Sock always has a plan.
Lord Sock always does have a plan. I feel like Lord Sock should be on our apocalypse team.
Definitely.
Yeah. At Nancy Theater on Instagram said, with other people. Humans tend to be less nervous and draw strength from people, and I feel like I'd be really nervous if I was alone and rebels were attacking the castle.
Fair.
Uh-huh.
I get that. Uh-huh. I agree. Tonya on Facebook said, people talk too much. I don't know if it's necessarily just within the context of this Would You Rather. But she does go on to say, more likely to get caught.
Steph on Facebook said, I like some socializing, but too many people can be exhausting, overwhelming, and annoying. I agree with Sonia.
Colin on Facebook said, I dislike large crowds of people, so I'm happy being in by myself. Plus, it means I can sing and fart with complete immunity to embarrassment. God, that safe room would stink.
Jeez. Coral on Facebook said, I get a little claustrophobic in small spaces, so add people to that? No way. I'll be by myself.
It's a good mix of comments there, isn't
it? Really is. Yeah. What do you say?
Oh, wow. Wow. I'm going to say by myself. I think as much as I agree with what Nancy Theatre on Instagram is saying that, you know, you might be less nervous with other people. The opposite is true. Fear can build and feed off other people's fear. Because if I was in a safe room, you're in a safe room. It is designed to keep people out and you in. I would probably try to go to sleep.
Probably, like, yeah.
I would really, honest to God, if there was nothing else, you know, other to try and draw my brain out of what was going on outside, I would probably try and go to sleep. And for me, at this point, being in the selection competition, the rebels are attacking pretty much every night now.
Yeah.
It's going to get to a point where it's so commonplace, you become complacent. Which means if you're in a safe room by yourself, it's not going to be as terrifying because by the time you've got to this place, you're like, eh. What about you?
Maybe by myself too. But can I request that I'm by myself in a large safe room and not one of the small servant safe rooms where all you have is a sink and a bucket?
Oh, I'm having, like, a decent-sized safe room. There's a sofa, a TV, a well-stocked library, a separate bathroom with a shower. Yeah, full plumbing, yeah. Snacks.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they probably all had food. But I feel like the servants get ration bars or something, and they have the emergency blankets that are, like, those sheets of reflective paper.
And yeah, that's the foil things, and, like, they've got, like, foam cushions to sit on.
They don't even have that. They have, like, one bench with splinters in it. And the walls are dripping, and yeah, and they have the bucket, and they have the sink, yeah. And that's it.
No, I'm having my own, like, mine's not just, like, basically a cell to keep me in. Mine is going to be luxury.
Yes. I will be in that safe room by myself. I don't want to be in the small bucket one, though.
No. It's like, hello, I'm, like, cast level, what, 3 now?
Yeah.
I'm going to be queen.
You're not a poor 5 anymore.
Yeah. Don't call me a 5.
That's what I'm going to do.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. Would you rather be caned or shot?
There's a lot of dismantling of this.
Let's shot take it just killed? As no let not Celeste arm. not Celeste shot.
Okay.
Like
America
shot or
Marley
Aspen.
Kidd.
Or I think Aspen was also shot, like in the leg or something.
Possibly, but we don't care about Aspen.
Right. So but not blow your head off shot.
That's fine. So shot in the arm. Which to me, when I was reading the book, I swear was just a graze. Like, oh, shut your mouth.
Yeah, she even mentions that too. She's like, no, I like it's bad, it hurts, but it's just a cut.
Yeah, but then it's like, oh, my arm's dropping off. Oh, I'm poor. I'm a level 5. I'm going to get gangrene. Oh, get over yourself, love. Yeah, okay, so America shot or Marley caned?
Okay.
Shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's one blow, it's to the arm, it's not like major blood vessel area, not a major joint, mm-hmm. No major organs. Quick sewing, dab some alcohol wipes on there, good to go. If your hands are going to be caned, you're basically putting your hands out of commission for a long time.
Yeah.
Because the nerve endings, the bruising, the bones could be affected by it, the tendons, you know. It's going to put your hands out of commission for a long, long, long time, and it's going to be major pain for a long, long time. Yeah. And it's not just one caning to the hands, it's multiple blows.
Yeah.
So, shot.
I'm also going to be shot, and also take into account that the caning was public.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I don't want to be caned in public.
No.
No. No, I mean, I don't want to be caned in private either. Like, if you think of Maxon being whipped by his father, which was awful.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I'll take the bullet wound. I'd even take the shot to the leg that puts you with a cane for the rest of your life. Yeah. Over the public caning.
Yeah.
I will have a cane, not be caned.
Next question. Would you rather dismantle the casts or end corporal punishment? Which is an interesting question to come after the response you just gave regarding the caning.
Yeah, because it's funny, I'm going to choose to dismantle the casts, even though I don't want to be publicly flogged. Which if we end corporal punishment, that's fine, that's that taken care of. But I feel like, I don't understand the cast so much. In that, like, this is the cast that you're given. And if you're a 5, because I'm poor, I'm a 5, I'm poor. Let's just use that as an example. If you're a 5, you are an artist or a musician. But, like, her little brother doesn't know how to do any of those things. And he would obviously, if he grows up in this life where he has to be an artist or a musician, he's going to suck at it. And he's probably going to turn into an eight.
Yeah.
Because he's not successful at all. Like, I just don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. Like,
I don't know, I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you. Your cast just finds your job.
Rather right, than I feel being... like, I feel like it would make more sense if the casts were based on the money that you make. Regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
This, like, if you get paid from this range to this range, well, you're this cast. Not based on your job. That doesn't make any sense.
There's actually a point, you know, when Celeste's friend, who's that big singer that they talk about,
mm-hmm.
comes to the party, and she's not a five, she's like a two.
So right, because she's hit celebrity status. Yeah, so she's so the a cast celebrity. System
doesn't make sense when you compare America Singer with the Lady Gaga, because she didn't even come from a five, though. She came from the aristocracy. I mean, to me, the level twos are like the aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the label, my understanding, with class systems being put onto it. Level one is the royalty, level two is the aristocracy.
Mm-hmm.
So she's already in that level. She didn't start off as five. So it doesn't make sense.
I think that she's just the daughter of celebrities. So she's already famous, and so she's just going to become a famous singer because she already is famous. And they mention kind of, I think anyway, or maybe that's in another one of the short stories. No, it's definitely in a short story. But they do mention that the musicians, well, they're the band that plays behind the singer. So nobody knows who they are, but that's their musical talent. So the fives are the backup singers,
yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah, or I imagine
says she'll never be able to, you know, become a level two based on her talent because she's, I'm a level five.
I'm a five. I feel like it's a like a folk singer or someone who just like plays the guitar and they're unsuccessful. They're an unsuccessful musician. That's the difference. They're unsuccessful versus successful.
But that's where it comes into the monetary value.
Right. So it should exactly. just be based on the amount of money that you make, no matter yeah. what you do.
Doesn't Corda, isn't he? He's not level five. He's level six or something. He's worked his way up.
No, the other way. He's trying to buy himself up into society.
Yeah, into level four, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make sense because we learned that the level fours are business owners.
I wonder how much it's been thought out. I mean, I understand that saying, okay, so level eight is the servant class. I get that.
No, no. Level eight is worse than that. Level eight is homeless.
Okay, level eight's homeless.
And level seven is... Or we should say levels. Class. They're not levels. It's casts.
Casts.
The sevens are manual laborers.
Okay.
The sixes are servants. So they're inside the house, where the sevens are outside of the house working.
Okay.
And then
fives are artists?
Yeah.
I can understand it more if there was multiple, like, job roles within that cast.
Yeah, and then... And
like you say, based on money.
Right, because then the fours are business owners or something like that. And then... But then you also learn that Queen Amberlee worked in a factory and she's a four. Why is a factory worker a four when a manual laborer is a seven? They're doing the same thing.
It's the same thing.
And then the threes are professors and doctors and, like, teachers.
Quote-unquote professionals.
Yes. It should really just be based on money.
Yeah, it doesn't make... Let's just dismantle the castes, because, to be fair, I think if you dismantle the caste systems, the corporal punishment system will probably fall whilst you rebuild society.
Yeah.
Because the caste system doesn't make any sense.
No. And, I mean, we learned that Gregory Ilya just made them up so he could elevate his friends and make his friends important things and give them important jobs and send the people that he hated down and make them homeless. I mean, that's
so do you
really
think somebody just, like, drew a bad picture of him? He's like, yeah, fuck you, you're a level 5. You're just cast level 5 now.
Yeah. Maybe.
I don't like your... You can't play the piano for shit. You cast 5.
Yeah, you're a 5. I think it must have been something like that.
Yeah, just... I don't get it.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And, you know, it didn't really make sense that Gregory Ilya was in leadership at all, except for the fact that he bought his way there, which also leads credence to the fact that it should be money-based, because he's a million billionaire and he can pay for things to happen. So he should be a 1 because he has the most money.
Damn bloody 1%ers. I also don't understand how he became royalty. He bought himself into royalty. Because if you marry your daughter into royalty, that doesn't make you royalty. That makes your daughter royalty.
Yeah, it doesn't.
That's not how monarchy works.
No. I mean, it could in 300 years after a million or million wars with everyone. Maybe just nothing makes sense anymore.
Okay, so we have dismantled the caste system, yay us.
Yeah, and get rid of it. It doesn't make any sense.
Ended as well because we're fantastic and that's what we do.
Yes.
We get shit done.
So, next question. Really, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question. Would you rather be a rebel or in the selection?
I don't know.
I wish that we could have asked this question on social media, but because we tend to try to ask things in a way that anyone could respond, whether you've read the books or not, you know, it makes it harder to ask these sorts of questions, but I would have liked to have asked this question on social media.
I'm tempted to post this one on social media as a just for fun.
Yeah.
Because I would be interested to see.
But this one, you know, you really have to know more about the series before you can answer it.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like, it would be... Like I say, it's not our social media question because you don't, unless you know the series or, you know, even listen to last week's episode, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if we linked it up to the selection and let the people who are the fans of the selection answer it, then I think it might be a good one to post for fun. And there's a few Facebook book groups that might be interested in giving this one a shot. I think we'd get some interesting feedback on this one. So, well, that's something to consider. I do not know. Because on the one hand, it's kind of like nice to be in the selection, a bit pampered and just get on with things and wear pretty dresses. But I don't think I would want to wear those bloody ball gowns all the time.
Yeah, we did talk last week about wearing pants quite a bit.
Yeah, I'll probably have pants on underneath if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Being a rebel feels a little dangerous, but not actually as dangerous in the Selection series as in other, like, dystopian futures.
If you're a northern rebel, you're going to be a rebel?
Yeah, I'm going to, like, you know, be busy mates with Georgia. Read books.
I just remembered what I was surprised about. I just remembered it.
Edit this back in, you.
No, I was surprised that they didn't realize that the guards at the end were not anyone that they've ever seen before, and they were all dirty and scruffy, and they're just fine with it.
Yes.
And then it turns out they're Southern Rebels. But yes, also that the Southern Rebels pulled out the red sashes and tied them on, which I might have talked about this last week, or I might have talked about it off podcast, but they pulled out the red sashes, tied them on, and then started shooting everyone. However, when they were out America and Maxon sneaking out of the palace. Her pants are tied with a red sash, and they made it. It was important enough to write that she is wearing a red sash, and they shoot her anyway. If a red sash is the mark of a Southern rebel, why did they shoot her? Frustrating. So that's what I was surprised about. There it is.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%, and you need to go and edit that into the correct place.
You think so? I can't just leave it here?
I mean, if you want to, it's up to you.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see how it
sounds. See what the power and the whim of the editor on Monday takes you.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Okay. So you're back in the ladies' room, the women's room. I think I'm going to be a rebel. I'm going to be a rebel with Georgia. I'm going to make change. I'm going to affect change. I'm going to get shit done. To be fair, the life of a rebel doesn't seem all that dangerous in this dystopian future.
No, it really didn't.
No, you know, and even if you were a Southern rebel, what you just breaking into the palace every now and again and trashing the place.
Yeah, I feel like...
They must have permanent decorators. The place was stink paint.
Probably does. I kind of feel like the differences between the rebels are that the Southern rebels are the angry homeless, and the Northern rebels are the people who are just trying to quietly enact change.
Yeah. Seem to be doing it, like, more within the boundaries of the law, perhaps? Like,
yeah.
The Northern rebels don't seem to do much kind of, like, rebelling.
Yeah, they break in looking for information.
The break in looking for books. I mean, I can't fault that.
I do hate, though, that when America runs off into the forest and she's hiding and she tells Aspen, hey, those rebels had a backpack full of books. And he's like, oh, it's just because they're poor and they're burning books to survive. Like, dude, really? That's what you think?
You are clueless.
Pretty sure we're in a fucking forest right now, so they could cut down one tree.
They don't even need to cut down a tree. You just walk into a forest and pick shit off the ground. Like, not, well, branches. Not actual. Leave the squirrels alone. But they're surrounded by flammable things.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was really stupid on Aspen's part.
It's because he's stupid.
But we know that he's stupid.
He's a big butt face.
He's terrible.
Are you a rebel or are you in the selection? Are you wearing the dresses and eating the tarts because you're hangry?
Maybe.
Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe I would be in the selection to change my station in life. If I'm America, for instance, and go from a 5 to a 3. Maybe I would do that. And then once I'm at home and I learn that my father is a rebel, then I can become a rebel. And then I come back into the palace at the end and guns blazing and shoot everyone.
But not Celeste.
But not Celeste. Thank you. I save her. Yeah, yeah. I think that I would probably be in the selection. I wouldn't make it to the top, though.
You're not going to be in the elite.
Mm-mm. No, I don't think I would. If I made it to the elite, I mean, I don't think I would make it.
You're not going to do a Celeste and put bleach in people's shampoo bottles.
No.
Glass in their shoes.
Put glass in people's shoes. She's hilarious.
As long as you're not in the on the other end of Celeste's wrath.
Yeah. Get on our good side.
Cool. Okay, last question, and let's face it, this is the one. Ba-dum-tsh. Would you rather marry Maxon or Aspen? Do I really need to give my answer?
Yeah, but just probably because you'll yell about it and it'll be funny.
Why do people always laugh at me when I go on a rant? You have to answer first. I asked, you answer.
Just for the general person, I'm going to marry Maxon. I don't care that he's the prince. I don't care that he's going to be a king. He is a better human being than Aspen is. So I'm going to pick Maxon. Take out the cast, take out the royalty, take everything out. I'm going to marry Maxon instead of Aspen. Aspen frustrates me so much in that he's like, he's just he's like a hanger on her and he's always there and he's like putting ideas into her head about how terrible Maxon is. And Maxon is actually a good guy. He has a good heart. Everything about him is good. 90% of the things about him are good. I'm going to pick Maxon. I don't care that he's the prince.
Same. Exactly the same. Aspen is an asshat. Maxon is a genuinely nice guy. And he just wants the best. And he listens.
Yeah, I feel like Aspen is like your high school boyfriend that you were in a decently long relationship with. But you broke up. And he broke up with you. So, you know, he's like, whatever. But then he just keeps trying to come back. He realizes that he's made a mistake, so he's going to just keep trying to come back and get you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the guy that you're with now, he's actually bad, and I'm better than he is.
Yeah. If you're a genuinely good guy, you do not need to put anybody down, because, you know, your actions, your attitude, your personality will speak for itself.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, we know, I think, he is an absolute douche canoe. I do not like Aspen at all. And I don't even necessarily think he redeems himself in the book. Because he's a huge non-event.
No, and then he decides...
With a tiny head because of all the testosterone pumping into him.
His head is very small and his body just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
He's a Goomba from the original Mario Brothers movie.
Does he play the harmonica?
We can only hope and pray.
No, but he's a 6. He's not a 5.
Dang it.
I know.
Good. Good. So I'm not going to go on a hysterical rant because I think I have said it already enough times. Maxon. I would marry Maxon.
Yeah.
And then, regardless of being queen or prince, but once I am queen, my first command shall be off with his head. It probably won't be. It'll probably be bringing strawberry tarts for breakfast.
Probably. Probably be that. Okay. Favorite final thought quote.
Oh, I have two.
I also have two.
Neither of them are particularly funny, though.
No.
Sorry.
That's okay.
My first one is from The Elite. And it is, love is beautiful fear.
Yeah.
And I quite like that. Mm-hmm. And the next one is from The One. And it is, best people all have some kind of scar.
I hate that she compares herself to anyone else who has scars, though, in that situation. Maxon's fucking back is covered because he takes beatings from his shit-ass father all the time. Standing up for you, who knows who else he's standing up for, probably shielding his mother from being hit. Mm-hmm. He's got scars all across his back for that. And Marley, her hands are destroyed, and you got grazed by a bullet, and you're comparing yourself to them. You're not that good.
No. America but that is a terrible, terrible person.
Yeah. But that is true. I do like that quote.
Mm-hmm. The sentiment stands. The person is a sucky person.
Yes.
Okay. You, what's your favorite?
I also have
quote?
Two.
Cool.
I also have one from The Elite and one from The One.
Oh.
I know. It's very shocking.
We should plan this more often.
I know. Almost like we do this every single week. So my one from The Elite is also a one for fun, kind of.
Okay.
I pranced around the room like a blind moose, but what I lacked in grace, I made up for in effort. I love that, and it doesn't make any sense at all, that she is a musician, but she has no dancing ability, because really the main thing about dancing is keeping a count, keeping a beat, and moving to the beat, and you know she can keep a beat because she can play music well. It doesn't make any sense that she can't dance.
Yeah, I can understand her not being able to, like, waltz or Charleston or necessarily, you know, even do the floss. I get that she can't do a professional-looking dance, but you at least know how to sway to the beat. You know, when it gets to one beat, you're one side and one beat. I totally get that. Exactly what you're saying. That's because American Singer is a crappy person.
Yeah, she's terrible. Can I tell you that I irrationally hate the floss dance? Pretty sure I've erupted in flames about it before.
Like, I'm with you.
It just makes me want to die. I hate it.
It doesn't make any sense.
I hate it.
And if you ever try to do it, as you see on social media videos, you just look like an absolute carpet.
You look like that anyway, even if you're doing it well, because it's stupid. Okay, so that's my first one. And my second one, from the one.
Okay.
It's part of the letter that America's dad writes to her. Live your life. Be happy as you can be. Let go of the things that don't matter and fight.
Nice. Yeah. I like that.
He's got some good life lessons, that dad.
Yeah, R.I.P. the dad.
Yeah. All right, if you liked this, try this. Do you have anything?
I do. It's really got nothing to do with the selection.
Okay. Tenuously tie it?
I'm tenuously tying it more because it is a suggestion to do with the book club challenge theme this month of Wash, Rinse, Repeat.
Okay.
Which is read a book that has been on the podcast before, or your favourite book again.
Okay.
I've picked this, the first book in a series, because I have read the book, but I have not participated in a fictional hangover conversation.
So what book is it? What is it that has been on the show before that you are not involved in?
The Cruel Prince by Holly Black.
Yes, okay. Which is also, there's royalty?
There is royalty. I mean, there are some tenuous links, but I'm not picking it because it's got anything really strictly to do with the selection. Okay. I'm picking it because of the book club challenge theme this month. So I have read The Cruel Prince, and it's a good book. I suppose, though, the whole trilogy does suffer kind of the same things with the selection for me, where book one and book two could be joined together, or book two and book three could be joined together. It could be quite easily a duology, or, you know, mashed up to be a thicker book. So if you want a tenuous link into the selection, you've got a couple there, but it's mainly for the Wash, Rinse, Repeat book theme. So I've picked The Cruel Prince by Holly Black. Summary is as per Goodreads. Jude was 7 when her parents were murdered, and she and her 2 sisters were stolen away to live in the treacherous High Court of Faery. 10 years later, Jude wants nothing more than to belong there, despite her mortality. But many of the Fae despise humans, especially Prince Cardan, the youngest and wickedest son of the High King. To win a place at the court, she must defy him and face the consequences. As Jude becomes more deeply embroiled in the palace intrigues and deceptions, she discovers her own capacity for trickery and bloodshed. But as betrayal threatens to drown the courts of Faery in violence, Jude will need to risk her life in a dangerous alliance to save her sisters and Faery itself.
That was a good series.
It was a very good series, and I'm glad that I read it. But it's one of those where we haven't done the level of detail because it was BC.
Yeah, but we were doing full summaries by that point.
You might have been doing full summaries by that point, but you didn't have me.
That's true. That is true.
So, yeah. That is true. I was involved in the Queen of Nothing.
That's right.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Which was a very good ending to the series.
It was a good ending to the series.
And I'm not a big fairy fan.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Like,
but I do like this series.
I don't care for fairies. At least this kind of fairies. Like, if you're a magical fairy, and that's fine. But I don't like the Seely and the Unseely court. Like, that, I don't like that.
It has to be done in a certain way for me to like it. We know I like the Jim Butcher variation of it. And this is very well done as well. And I enjoyed this trilogy as well. So that is my recommendation for this week. What about you?
I have one that I chose because it was a TV series meets story sort of thing.
But also, like the Bachelorette kind of.
Yeah. But also I found it very interesting, which I don't know if I'll leave that in or not. I don't remember what the conversation was, but we briefly mentioned Mulan, and it just made me go, oh, and then the book I'm talking about is Project Runway meets Mulan. So that's kind of fun. Anyway. So this one is called Spin the Dawn by Elizabeth Lim. And as I just said, it's Project Runway meets Mulan. It's about a young girl who poses as a boy to compete for the role of Imperial Tailor and embarks on an impossible journey to sew 3 magic dresses from the sun, the moon, and the stars. Sounds very interesting. Maya Tamarin dreams of becoming the greatest tailor in the land, but as a girl, the best she can hope for is to marry well. When a royal messenger summons her ailing father, once a tailor of renown, to court, Maya poses as a boy and takes his place. She knows her life is forfeit if her secret is discovered, but she'll take that risk to achieve her dream and save her family from ruin. There's just one catch. Maya is one of 12 tailors vying for the job. Enter Project Runway. Backstabbing and lies run rampant as the tailors compete in challenges to prove their artistry and skill. Maya's task is further complicated when she draws the attention of the court magician, Eden, whose piercing eyes seem to see straight through her disguise. And nothing could have prepared her for the final challenge. To sew 3 magic gowns for the emperor's reluctant bride-to-be, from the laughter of the sun, the tears of the moon, and the blood of the stars. With this impossible task before her, she embarks on a journey to the far reaches of the kingdom, seeking the sun, the moon, and the stars, and finding more than she ever could have imagined.
That sounds really good.
Sounds fun. Yeah. It's been on my want-to-read list on Goodreads for a while.
It might be one that we might need to put in somewhere.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss another book that meets our Wash, Rinse, Repeat book club challenge, The Dead House by Dawn Kurtigich.
Yes!
Narrated by Charlotte Perry and Christian Coulson. Look out for our Would You Rather polls on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite Fictional Hangover-themed merchandise, and become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.